the whole time I was watching this, I was like, did Bob Cousy have an acting career I didn't know about? Because I would totally buy that.
Hi, and welcome to the episode of Cinenation. My name is Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Thomas Horton.
And with each new episode of Cinenation, we don't know what we're doing now. No, we tend to dive into genre and look at genre as a whole and look at directors. But with the coronavirus, COVID-19, we've kind of changed things up. And we're kind of taking a look at just sports movies in general for the month of April. Our plan was thrown out the window, as we've said before in the past few episodes. We've done Bull Durham for baseball. We've done Friday Night Lights for football. And we want to do a basketball movie. And we looked through our list. And, I mean, Hoosiers is the big one that a lot of people would talk about. Mm-hmm. But I want to rewatch at some point. I haven't rewatched in a while. But there was one that I felt Thomas hadn't seen, I hadn't seen in a while, that hopefully could be an interesting conversation. It's also available to stream on Prime. So if you want to go watch it and then come back and listen to this episode, feel free. We're going to talk about Blue Chips, starring Nick Nolte and Shaquille O'Neal and a bunch of other people you might recognize. Blue Chips is a basketball movie, came out in 1994, directed by William Friedkin, director of French Connection and The Exorcist. Blue Chips is about Nick Nolte, who plays Pete Bell, coach of Western University, which is like a surrogate for like UCLA type school. And he used to win national championships at school. Now he's kind of having his first losing season, and he decides to finally illegally recruit players by essentially bribing them. So it felt like it was a very timely topic at the time, written by Ron Shelton, who wrote and directed Bull Durham. But so, Thomas, you never seen Blue Chips. What were your thoughts?
I enjoyed it, man. I had a good time. Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
Damn it, that was my bit. I wanted to do that bit. Okay. I was playing that bit last night. I was like, I'm going to do that bit. That's going to be a good bit.
It just came to me. No, but it's true. Basketball is my favorite sport. So
Same.
And there's a lot of basketball movies out there I enjoy. I really like White Men Can't Jump. He Got Game. I like Hoosiers, even though I haven't seen it since in a long time. I don't know. It's one of those movies I'm like, yeah, I enjoyed that, but it's never one I'm like, I want to pull that out and like rewatch it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It was big in my middle school days.
Yeah, but it's also one of those things kind of like we talked about with stuff like, I don't know, we've talked about this in the past with me and like stand-up comedy movies. Like basketball, I'll go watch a basketball game. Like, you know, I'm not necessarily dying for like... And I like watching older games. I like watching documentaries. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this one. I like the way and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I really like the way basketball was shot in this. It felt like I was mm-hmm. watching real basketball, and I'm sure that's also partially because there are real players in most of this. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it overall. It's not something you see. It feels different for a sports movie. It's not necessarily about like, are we going to win? Like you're not, instead yeah. of watching, I mean, really, because most sports films, I feel like, follow the course of a season. Like that is the structure of the movie, is your intro is like a yeah. new season. And this is the exact opposite. You open with the last game of the season and you end with the first game of the season, which was really interesting. It's a really different take on the basketball movie. It feels like it's much more about what's going on off the court, what's going on behind the scenes. And I wasn't sure I was going to be down with that, but it's presented in a way that's fun and funny, and it's really cool cast, and I had a good time.
I think in a weird way it reminded me a little bit of Friday Night Lights with like in terms of like how they capture the play of the game. Mm-hmm. Like it's done very realistically. It's honestly it might be the most realistic portrayal of basketball like playing in a movie. I can't really think of another one.
Exactly what I was talking about with Friday Night Lights. Like you had some shots set up where they could pan down the court and follow the action all the way down the court. Yeah. We had a lot of shots set up from like under the basket so you could see people coming at you, and you didn't have to just be cutting, which I mean I understand that football lends itself to a more, I don't want to necessarily use a more violent cut, but like football does lend itself. You got hits and then you cut, one person gets hit and then you cut somewhere else. But this was what I was kind of talking about, especially if you're going to recruit real athletes to be in your game, like let us feel like we're watching a real game, like make it feel like it's actually happening to us. And I think this does it really well.
Yeah, it feels like they have cameras on the coaches and you're hearing just kind of like the banter between coaches, especially with the referees during certain things. And it definitely catches like moments that aren't important or don't seem important to the game. Like you're seeing missed shots, you're seeing like steals that turn into a bad fast break, or you're seeing like a bad call. And it's not like a bad call in terms of like drama, like in say Friday Night Lights when the ref makes a bad call at the end of the game. It's more just like, that was a bad call. Like you're just kind of like in the, like almost like in war, and you're just seeing like glimpses of these characters fight for this game.
Yeah. And you're right. It gives you the opportunity to like show more of just, you get a better feel for the teams because you're seeing all the plays, you're seeing everything instead of like you were talking about with Friday Night Lights. Instead of seeing like every game, you see a 50-yard touchdown, like every game, and we're like, "How did the quarterback get this good?" Like,
yeah,
you see the good and the ugly in this, and yeah, there are a lot of times when you'd be watching and I think that helps to build tension. You'd be watching, and it's like, okay, we got to come back and get 12 points, and you're seeing them, you know, you'll see them go on a streak, and then you'll see them lose it, and then you'll see the other team like put up another 8 points, and I think it makes for more exciting play. This is of the sports movies we've watched so far, this was the most I enjoyed the sports within the movie, which I'm also biased because basketball is my favorite sport.
Is your favorite sport? Yeah. No, same. And that's kind of why I've always like shown affection towards this movie. Like I've always kind of seen it as underrated because it was one, two, growing up as a Shaquille O'Neal fan, I watched all of his movies growing up.
You didn't have a whole lot of movies to choose from. This is probably the best.
But Blue Chips was kind of the last one I found where I was like, wait, there's another Shaq movie I haven't heard of? And because I was like, it's getting a little bit
Shazam
older.
Or Kazam or whatever.
It's not Kazam or Steel. And I was just like, oh, what's this? Nick Nolte. And it was like, it's a Shaq basketball movie. And I was like, oh, this is easily the best Shaq movie ever made.
Shaq was great in this. I think they set him up. I think they set his character up really well for him, where he's really charming. It's a well written character, and it's just he can be Shaq. Like he doesn't have to be a genie or a superhero. He can be Shaq and be this character.
Yeah,
and he was my favorite of the players of the like freshmen for sure.
I mean, you talk about this with a little bit Garrett Hedlund with Friday Night Lights. We're like, how is this guy a thing? And weirdly, when you see Shaq in this movie, you're kind of like, I can kind of see why people want to put him in movies. I don't see them as one to put him in like lead roles, but like you can see why like it, like having Shaq in your movie was kind of attractive.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that scene when he's kind of got the banner going with Mary McDonnell about his SAT scores, and like basically like everyone's believed that he's dumb, and he's like, nah, I just didn't feel like trying. And she was like, I'll give you $100 if you can make a 700 on the SATs. He's like, I can make a 900. Watch me.
Tell me the country located immediately north of the United States.
Spain.
Tell me the country located immediately south of the United States.
Canada.
All right. I'll give you $50 if you will tell me the country located immediately south of the United States.
$50?
50.
Mexico, followed by Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Costa Rica. Where's my $50?
Oh, I was lying.
Crazy.
Yeah, I was married to Pete. What's your excuse?
You start off insulting me with these third grade geography questions. You think you're liberal, but you're nothing but a racist.
Why'd you score 520 on your SATs?
Because I wanted to.
That makes a lot of sense, Neo.
When I was young, my hood was so dangerous, I joined the army and we invaded the Persian Gulf for vacation. To make my own sense.
So why are we here?
We're here because maybe I want to go to college and maybe I don't. I won't know until I get in and find out how much bullshit it really is.
Okay, I'll make you a bet for real. I bet you $100 that you can't score 700 points on your SATs.
I'll score 700 in my sleep. $400, I'll score $800.
He's charismatic. He's charming. I even really love the moment. I think the moment that really wins me over with him in this movie is his last moment in the movie at the end of the game when Nolte's kind of like realized what he's about to do into this press conference. And Shaq walks out and he's like, hey, coach, how'd you like my spin move? It's just kind of like a, it's just a weird, like, it definitely, it's a bit of levity to the situation because, like, Nolte realizes, like, he just made this horrible thing. He just did this horrible stuff, these horrible things, and he's about to possibly ruin his career in this next scene. And Shaq, I feel like Shaq is, like, aware of it because he just kind of went off in the locker room, and Shaq just kind of, like, it's a nice moment because I think it helps Nolte's character realize, it may helps with, like, regaining his passion for basketball in a way, and that kind of established later on at the end of the movie. Where it's like he taught Shaq something and Shaq used it and like is now going to be a dominant player because of some of the stuff that Nolte taught him. It's just a very nice moment and it gets me.
Neon's also the one throughout as all this is going on. We'll get a little bit deeper into the plot, but like he's the one who's kind of, I just want to play basketball. Like he's the Crash Davis of this story. He's the one who's just, whether he's playing in this like little rundown gym that they find him in Louisiana at the beginning, like he just wants to play basketball and he's kind of above all the other stuff that these other players are bringing.
Yeah, it's like every other player is like, hey, I want this, and they give Shaq a car and he's just like, I didn't ask for this, and he takes it, but it's just kind of like he takes it because the dude gives him the keys and just walks away, and it's just like, okay. So yeah, the history of this movie before we get into kind of our favorite scenes, it was written by Ron Shelton, who wrote Bull Durham. He said he wrote it in like the mid to early 80s, the script, and it's set for 10 years. Because similar to, say, Bull Durham, no one wanted to make a basketball movie. And so it set around. He ended up taking the Shaq scene that in this movie, it takes place in him playing pickup basketball game in like Algiers, Louisiana. And it's like kind of in this rundown warehouse. And the original script for Blue Chips, it was in Compton playing a pickup basketball game. And so he took that scene as this was just kind of like sitting around and made White Man Can't Jump from that scene. So he plucked a scene from the movie, wrote it into a totally different movie. He's like, Blue Chips was like a marathon. He was like, White Man Can't Jump was a sprint, where it's like, I wrote this thing, so now I have two basketball movies. And Blue Chips wasn't being made, and all of a sudden someone's like, hey, we want to make this script. He goes, oh, you want to make Blue Chips? I go, no, we want to make White Man Can't Jump, and only White Man Can't Jump. And so he writes and directs that, and then because of White Man Can't Jump, that's when Blue Chips finally gets some traction. Before William Friedkin came on, the guys they were looking at for Pete Bell, Nick Nolte's character, Al Pacino, Andy Garcia, and Kurt Russell. Andy Garcia feels too young for that movie.
Yeah, in 93? Yeah, I think so. Kurt Russell I might be interested in seeing. I feel like Pacino shouting in the locker rooms would be a bit much. I mean, we ended up getting that in Any Given Sunday, but we're not following his character the whole time in Any Given Sunday. Like,
yeah, I think Pacino's persona works more for a pro game and not a college game. If that makes sense. It just feels like...
Speaking of personas and what the actors are bringing to the table, I was surprised how much I bought Nick Nolte as, like, not being crooked.
Yeah.
Like, I just knowing Nick Nolte... Well, and I texted you from, like, the first scene. I was like, oh, he's playing Bobby Knight. Like...
Yeah.
I was like, what year was this? Okay, 93. Yeah, this is after the chair throwing. Like, this...
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's done really well, both in the script and in the performance. Like you're introduced to him just like absolutely losing his temper and yelling at his players and all this stuff, and yet you like him, and you recognize him as someone who is like has a pure love of the game.
Yeah, he talked about, so with Nolte when he prepped for the role, when Friedkin came on, he was like, I only want Nick Nolte, and Nolte was weirdly the year before, I guess in 92, was named Sexiest Man Alive by People Magazine.
Wow.
And he was just like...
can't say that I see it.
I know. He was just like, you need to look at the cover of it. He said, like, I don't want to be known as, like, a pretty boy.
What is this picture? He's just wearing, like, a t-shirt.
And like, glasses. And it's just like, hey, the 90s were crazy.
He's a man's man that women can't resist. This was the year after Patrick Swayze. I mean, come on. Come on, People Magazine.
So Nolte's like, I want to make more complex roles. And so you see him in this movie like a year later, you're like, that was the sexiest man alive? Like Nolte, like, it's, he looks old and withered, I guess, like weathered in this movie. Like, he's been around the block. He's tired and, like, worn out and blue chips. You don't see sexiest man alive. Nah. Not when he comes out of the shower the way he does. Like, he just seems like...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what was going on with People Magazine. In 89, they picked Sean Connery. Like, 89 Sean Connery is not peak Sean Connery, I'm just saying.
That's untouchable Sean Connery, though, is the thing. Yeah, or, like, around untouchables.
It says, Sean Connery, the sexiest man alive, 1989. Older, balder, and better.
Oh, man. Okay, so the 92, you get Nolte. So Nolte does blue chips, and what he ends up doing, he starts shadowing Bobby Knight in Indiana. And I think he shadows him for like 2 weeks is what it is. And they said when he went into his room, Nolte's like kind of room when he was researching, it just had like post-its of like all the things he'd saw, like Bobby Knight's like gestures and things like that. And I think he had someone like edit a video down of Bobby Knight of only his gestures on when he actually coached, and Nolte would study that. I read that Nolte wrote like a 200 page like book on the character of Pete Bell and like the history and all that stuff. And so it is like, it's weird because he is playing Bobby Knight, and you can probably, I feel like one reason why this movie wasn't as well received is because they probably felt like they probably saw it as like an impersonation of Bobby Knight. Mm-hmm. But he's doing interesting stuff, and it was taking a lot from Knight's coaching style. For example, the opening scene, they talked about how Knight would go off and yell at kids, walk out, come back in and yell again, walk out, and then walk back in, like kind of like apologize in a way. Mm-hmm. It's a bad cop, bad cop, good cop is the it's like what this weird it's this weird thing that he does. And what's the funny part is the coaches in that scene when he walks out, they go to like start talking to the kids. He runs back in, they just all walk away.
Yeah,
and it just goes back and forth.
Honestly, Christ, I just want to go home and cry when I watch us play. Don't you boys understand? Don't you know how bad I want to see this team play? I want to see this team play so fucking bad I can taste it. Honest to Christ, you boys, the only joy I have right now is I only have to watch you guys play two more games. God damn it!
All right, guys. Let's start thinking about the game. Start thinking about what we're going to do out there.
I can't tell you how sick I am of basketball right now. I never thought I'd see the day when Western basketball is in the state it is right now. If I never see another game in my life, that's just fine by me. Dwayne, you can get through college half-assed. Richard, you can get through life half-assed. But I'll guarantee you boys one thing. Sure as hell, I'll guarantee you this. You cannot win half-assed. How do I win this ball game?
But yeah, so Nolte gets on board. I think it was, they said, Ron Shelton Friedkin went to his house and was like, hey, we're going to sleep here until you finish the script. Go into your room and finish the script. He goes, guys, you have to leave. Come back tomorrow and we'll talk about it. But they had like pillows and blankets, and they were like ready to like camp out in his living room so that he could read the script for Blue Chips. Nolte gets on board, and Friedkin kind of said, he goes, hey, there's two things you can do with this. It's like, you can cast actors who can like bring, that have acting chops for the acting roles that are in the non-sport scenes, and you can kind of like fake the sports, or you hire real athletes and just kind of risk it and hope they can actually act. And Friedkin said that he hated how in most sports movies you couldn't, like, it's when you had actors, the sports didn't work because they couldn't really play the sport. So he wanted to cast actual athletes. And Shaq was coming off his rookie season in Orlando, and I think Friedkin like ran into him at like the Four Seasons in LA. He's like, dude, I've been looking all over for you. and Shaq's just like, me? And he's like, who are you? He's like, I'm William Friedkin. He goes, ah, I love The Exorcist. It's like, what, Shaq? It was like, Shaq was like, dude, he's like, The Exorcist is my mom's favorite, my and my mom's favorite film that we watched together. And so they talked about it, and that's how Shaq got the role. And then Anthony Penny Hardaway, was just in college at that point. And he was at Memphis, and they had heard about him, and they're looking for like a point guard who a flashy point guard, but who was like could be the best player in the league. And they somehow got a tape of Penny Hardaway playing, and they reached out to him, cast him. And then they cast Matt Nover, who is the kid from Indiana, I think because he played at Indiana for Bobby Knight. And there was kind of a rumor, I don't know if it was true, but that basically Bobby Knight wouldn't do the film unless they casted one of his players in one of the lead roles. Don't know how true that is.
So then they like cast him as kind of a quasi-villain. I mean, he's the worst dude.
He's the worst dude. Like, I think he's the worst dude. I kind of don't like his family either. Like, it's just like, I need a new tractor. Like
young Jim Beavers?
He goes, I was raised Baptist. Southern Baptist or First Baptist? First Baptist, man,
that's Jim Beavers from Deadwood.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyway, it's just that, like, that... We'll talk about this once we get into it. There's some of the Indiana scenes get me. But yeah, so he cast all the main three guys, and then they start kind of filling these cameo roles with a lot of people. One big standout to me was Bob Cousy as the AD.
Bob Cousy's fantastic in this.
Yeah, like Bob Cousy like is not like just a cameo role. Like he's like
he has lines.
A character. Yeah, he has lines. And the scene. Yeah,
the whole time I was watching this, I was like, did Bob Cousy have an acting career I didn't know about? Because I would totally buy that.
It's like he's in like I think probably five or six scenes.
Yeah. And like he's great in the climax and like the big press conference, and they keep cutting back to him for reaction shots. And he is acting. Like it's impressive.
You're just like, why didn't Cousy
Marcus
have a
Johnson
career?
Had some good like beats when he's like in a group scene as one of the kind of assistant coaches. There's some cameos in here that I was very impressed. Larry Bird, not so much. love him. Probably my favorite basketball player of all time. Not an actor. Never been. Never been great at even in McDonald's commercials. Always kind of struggled a little bit.
There was one of the videos I watched on Blue Chips was talking about how like when you watch it, it's like they're talking about how the cameos like some really work and some don't, and like Bird is like playing basketball on his court, and like right when he hears a voice, not knowing who it is, he's just smiling and waving at the person. Like it's like, hey, how's it going?
It was funny because I was watching this, and my girlfriend was sitting on the couch and like not really paying attention, but just kind of there. And I was like voicing some things to her. And when when it pops up like Indiana, I was like, oh, Larry Bird was from Indiana. And she was like, oh, really? I was like, yeah. And then like the next shot is him. Like, I was like, oh, there he is. Yeah, because I had not, you told me there were going to be a lot of cameos, but I purposely didn't look any of them up. And afterwards, I looked some up and realized that I like missed some people because I wasn't looking for them. But but it was fun to have the surprises.
Apparently, Kevin Garnett's in this movie, and I have not ever seen Kevin Garnett in this movie.
Well, and, Rick Fox was playing for the first.
Rick
the very
Fox,
first team.
I saw him.
You saw
the very
him?
First team.
I didn't see him. I looked it up afterwards. I saw where he tweeted. He tweeted not too long ago. He tweeted that scene out and was like, completely forgot that in my first screen appearance, Rick Pitino was my coach.
Yeah. No, because I think Pitino calls him out at one point, like on the court, and yeah, And like so a lot of the college teams are playing. It's not the actual players that played for those teams, but they just casted cast real players.
And Kevin Garnett was supposed to be on the Western team.
He apparently was on the Western team.
I wonder if it was in like on the tapes from like that, like from maybe. The 3 years ago, maybe.
I don't know.
Because you did tell me he was there, and I looked for him, and I never saw him. He's fairly easy to pick out.
But that was like he had to be like early high school, because Garnett, you're looking at like 93. That's why I was like, is Garnett really in this movie? Because he doesn't get drafted for another like 3 or 4 years. I think he was in high school. He came right out of high school, so he was young if he was in this movie. So favorite scenes of the film.
I mean, I enjoyed the whole sequence of like initially going out and meeting these players. Like it almost felt like a heist movie, like the out and putting a heist together kind of thing. And you're going to all these different locations, and I just kind of liked the way they were showing all the different ways from Penny Hardaway playing in this like it looked like a Catholic school. I mean, there was like a nun and a like playing in this like packed Catholic school gym in Chicago, and then you cut out to Indiana, and this other kid is learning on his like dad's homemade goal on their on their farm. That part was fun. I really enjoyed that, and I really liked the last game. I was texting you. I was like, Bobby Knight is fantastic in this. It was all really compelling, and you know, you're getting these Nick Nolte reaction shots and kind of seeing him realize the weight of what he's done as this game is going on, and you're really getting to see all the new guys play for the first time, like outside of practice. So I think it all came together. The last game going into that press conference was all great, and I really enjoyed the press conference. The one thing I did think was like, when he like gets about halfway through and he like walks down off the stage and is just standing talking, I'm like, man, all these reporters are freaking out because none of them are getting audio on this right now. It's probably the greatest press conference in college basketball history, and no one's getting any audio.
Nolte's speech is one of my favorite scenes. When you get to the last game, like you're saying, pretty much the end of the movie, I like everything about it.
Yeah, I really like that little scene. Like, and that's the thing with the character of Pete Bell, when they and this is a Ron Shelton thing, like for the love of the game, the way he builds this like purity of spirit as far as the game goes, like you've watched this guy like almost sell his soul for basketball, and then you've got that last sequence where he's just having a blast teaching those kids on the like he's just like basically ruined his entire career, and you see him walking home. And he runs up on these kids that are playing and like goes to teach one how to do a jump shot. And you can just see him like, you're like, oh, he has to do this. This is his, like, this is just his nature. And he loves it.
It was because I didn't catch it till this time, was kind of in the opening. The first scene, I think with Kuzi, but it's the first kind of like dialogue scene after the first game where he talks about, he's like, I feel like I've lost my passion for this. And the movie is a morality tale, but it's like, you have to see him go as far as he can with it, but in a way he loses everything but gains his passion for the game back in the middle of it. He loses his credibility, loses his career, but he gains the love of the game back by the end of the film.
Well, and he has that moment where he says, you know, you want to know the best basketball I've ever coached? It was last season, and it was a losing season, and like he obviously did not feel that way about that season while he was in it. So you see him get to a point where he can look back on it and go, oh, I'm actually really proud of those guys last season. But I mean, it's a very unique way, I feel like, to do a morality tale, in that I feel like they get you on board completely as it's going along. You're like, because you like these players a lot, you want these players to like do well, you want to see them all work together, like you're kind of rooting for all this to happen, and they make it fun. Like they make these scenes of like Alfrey Woodard getting her new house. It's all fun. And you're like, all right, here we go. You know what? Let's fudge the rules. Let's make it happen. And so it's not this kind of Shakespearean thing where you're watching him and you're going like, oh, how far has he fallen? Like you're there with him. And so you kind of realize with him when he realizes what he has to do, you're kind of like, oh man, I don't know. Like,
and I think because you buy, I think also you buy at least one of the characters with Shaq, where you're like, you want to see him like win a championship with these kids.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they build into it to Shaq, like they purposely have that point that like he never asked for anything either. Like,
yeah,
he was completely outside of the bribes and everything. Like he's the purest form of basketball for Pete to like reignite his passion.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. It's like basically Neon Badeau, Shaq's character, is essentially kind of an early version of like, or a later version of the kids that he ends up meeting in the park at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. and teaching how to play basketball.
Well, and he's also the one, I mean, he's the like undiscovered, like these other two guys are, everyone's gunning for him. And, yeah. and I think there's a special connection between Pete and Neon because he like found him. Like it wasn't a competition. It was just someone that Pete saw play and really wanted.
He kind of does similar spiel that he does with Penny, and the Indiana guy. I'm blanking on his name,
Ray?
But Matt, Ricky Rowe.
Ricky, yeah.
I think it's Ricky. Yeah, Ricky. He does it with Ricky. It's like he does the same spiel with Shaq, but like, it's even kind of like Shaq kind of brutally, like straight up ask him, would you help me get into college if I couldn't play basketball, or I didn't play basketball for you? He was just like, no, I wouldn't. It's like Shaq's character, Neon, kind of, it lets Nick, or lets Pete Bell kind of drop his guard and be kind of honest. Because Neon kind of knows, like, look, you're not coming knocking on my door unless I'm 7'2" and can dunk the ball like I can.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you wanting to help me? Is it out of the goodness of your heart, or are you just doing it because you want to win games? And he kind of opens up a little bit with Neon. And then he's also the one that like he lets he gets his ex-wife Mary McDonald to be his tutor. And there's good moments between them two when they're talking about like the SATs, but like Neon kind of like comes into the inner circle of Pete Bell's world,
mm-hmm.
in a subtle way. When Penny, Butch, Penny is his character's Butch. Butch and Ricky are kind of just like, they're those two star blue chips who are just kind of using this to their advantage.
Yeah. It's kind of subtle, but you get the feeling that Tony was the last player to, I mean, well, and they talk about that Tony was the last player that Mary McDonald tutored, but you get the feeling that Tony was the last player that Pete really like stuck his neck for in this way. Yeah.
And that's the part when, that's what hurts him so much when he finds out that Tony fixed a game,
mm-hmm.
was that he was like, he was the thing that like was keeping him going for these 4 years. And in a weird way, he was trying to build, because even Mary McDonald says it, where it's like she helps Neon because she wants to see Tony like have some help finally. So it's like Tony was a guy who was in their inner circle, and probably before their divorce maybe. And now all of a sudden, like, she's finding a way to help him out by bringing in these new people for his final senior season. And that's what kind of Nolte, I feel like, or Pete Bell kind of wants to do. And so that's the part where you find out he fixed a game, and you're just like, wait, what the heck? Like, you were the one I was buying into all this time, and in a way, put my neck on the line so you could have a good final senior season, and you did this to me when you were a freshman, like right when you came in. And it's kind of this, it opens up questions of like, what else do you do after that? Because if you're fixing a game when you're in your freshman year, and it went well for you, you might be doing it again the next few seasons. But no, yeah. So I agree with you. I like the stuff when they're going down, when he's searching around Indiana and Chicago and all that. I do like some of the Mary McDonald stuff with Nick Nolte that they have together. They have a good chemistry together. And JT Walsh is good, but he chews up the scenery so much in this movie. Like, he's just going all out in every scene.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think in the scene when he gets, like, called out of the press conference, you'd think they were, like, taking him to execute him or something. Like, it's like, you're done!
Or even, it's like when he calls about Butch, he's like, hey, Butch wants to know, he wants to kind of quit basketball. Can his mom keep his house? And he's just like, he knows what's going on. He made a deal. But yeah, anyway, so cameos. Like I said, with a lot of cameos, not just like basketball players, but just, I guess, a lot of small roles for actors. Robert Wool pops up in one scene as a guy who works at a shoe company.
Yeah, it's just like scouting players, right? Kind of the thing. Is he like?
Yeah, well, I think it's like he works at a shoe company. I think maybe he's looking at, oh, who can we get like for a brand deal later? I don't know. It's like it's at a shoe company. That's the only scene Robert Wool is in. It's never established really what his job is, but he's just there. And you're like, oh, it's the guy from Bull Durham.
It's Arliss.
The cameo that I think is the best, at least in terms of actual actor, is Louis Gossett Jr. as Butch's like principal, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. Your Butch's principal or coach. Just that one scene, you're like, oh, this guy's going to be a main character, and you never see him again.
Yeah, but you can tell it's something that like Ron Shelton like had this idea, and he was like, I really want to sell, because anyone who's not familiar with the scene, all these college coaches have been watching Penny Hardaway play basketball, and then you cut to all the college coaches like lined up outside the principal's office to get a chance to talk with them, and Louis Gossett Jr. comes out and basically acts like he's on an auction block, and he's like auctioning this basketball player out off to all these colleges, and it's a way that he you can tell that he's done this before, and he has a good sense of humor about it, but he's also feels a little bit bitter about the way that the college industry, kind of the college athletic industry, might ruin the academic careers of players and stuff, and it's very kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it has a lot, it's pretty cutting to like college athletics, and it's fun, it's funny, and but it's got something to say about the athletic industry, which is feels very Ron Shelton.
Uh-oh, there's blood in the water. Must be a point guard on the block around here somewhere. All right, gentlemen, what am I bid? Give me $50 for the strapping young boy, 17 and getting bigger every day. Dig deep in your pockets, gentlemen. They say he's a potential All-American. And he can read and write. The boy can actually read and write. He got 1,250 on his SATs. And ain't no problem either. His name ain't Abdul Rahman X or nothing like that. The boy's actual name is Butch. Now, with a name like that, he ought to have him some freckles. Now, what am I doing, gentlemen? Dig deep in your pockets. Dig deep.
Who else? We talked about Bobby Knight. Rick Pitino just seems like a dirtbag, even in his cameo to me. like just something about him annoys me. And it's always annoyed me, and maybe because like he's essentially playing like the adversary in the first game, but it's just like he seems like such a used car salesman. Like a ref makes a bad call, and Nolte's like, "Come on, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Good job, ref. You're doing great. You're doing wonderful. Mm. Keep doing that." And you're like, "Shut up. Like, come on." And you're like, "Oh," and then guess what happened?
I had read
blue chip scandals.
We're talking cameos. I know we already complimented Bob Cousy, but I read a thing that he was supposed to miss in that scene, and there was a joke in the script about there's a scene when he's just shooting off free throws while they're talking about, and that might have been a great, you know, that might have been a William Friedkin thing, you know, give actors if an actor is nervous or you know, overthinking, if you give them some business, something that's natural to them, it can sometimes bring out a better performance. So maybe it's just shooting free throws for Bob Cousy, but the story I read was that the script had a joke about him missing a free throw, and then they start shooting this scene, and he just can't not hit one. And so then Nick Nolte has to say something about like him never missing a free throw or something.
Don't you ever miss?
When other teams used to come in and see these banners, scared them to death.
Those banners were worth what? 8 points anyway.
Everything changes, huh?
Everything changes, coach.
Yeah, there's very little in life that man's got a control over. Things just happen. So when you got a chance to make a statement, goddammit, you gotta do it. We haven't been making a statement. When we were winning conference titles and going to the Final Four, we were making a statement.
The kids are working as hard as they can, you know. They just don't have the talent.
Yeah, well, I can't beat anybody with banners. I need players. I need horses.
You got horses. What you need are thoroughbreds.
Well, everybody in the country's buying these kids out of high school, giving them cars, money under the table. God knows what. Don't you ever miss?
the idea of the game. Put the ball in the hole.
There's two reasons I'm incapable of cheating. You want to hear them?
Tell me.
One, if I break the rules and I get caught, I'll get kicked out of coaching.
And what's the second reason?
I might not get caught. Miss the goddamn ball once, will you? Jesus Christ. You can't even miss left-handed.
Again, Cousy being a good actor, it's ad-lib. He goes, well, that's the point of the game. Put the ball in the basket. Like, he's told, like, it's just like, that's such a, like, that's a smart actor. Like, he didn't just, like, he had a line ready to go with Nolte's thing. And then he ends up switching left hand at the end of the scene. And he makes that one.
Still hits it, yeah.
And Nolte's like, you can't even miss left-handed. Like, it's such a real, it's such a nice moment. Yeah, Cousy, yeah. Bob Cousy. What's, and it's crazy to me, what cameos didn't work for you besides Larry Bird?
I mean, some of I would have, I especially since I feel like the college coach cameos are a little bit more dated, like the ones that aren't timeless, like Bobby Knight. But when he gets to Chicago and all these real coaches are there, those guys weren't great actors. And like I said, I really like that scene with Louis Gossett Jr. And I maybe would have enjoyed him playing off of real actors a little bit more than me going like, oh, I don't really remember any of these, like these college coaches in particular. Like,
cause they already look old at that point.
Yeah. 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 It's not Bobby Knight and Rick Pitino. Yeah, that was probably, other than Larry Bird, that was the time it like took me out of it, when I was like, these guys are obviously just here to have the name here and they are not acting at all. Like, they're really struggling.
It's just there to, it's like just kind of there to be like a funny bit where like Pete Bell like keeps one-upping them.
Yeah, and it does give you a better idea, because you're introduced to Pete Bell as a losing coach. And it gives you an idea, like once you get outside of the Western campus, it does, and he's able to like walk into this principal's office and bypass all these other coaches that are waiting. It does give you that idea that like, oh, he's the big deal. Like, he's, even if he's losing, he's still a huge coach.
And the reason why he gets to bypass them is because that's where Tony went to school at, and he recruited Tony there because that's what Louis Gossett asked about. How's Tony doing?
Like, oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah. Louis Gossett asked, how's Tony doing? And he's like, is he going to class? He's like, he's doing fine. Like, I'm doing my best on him. So it's like, and this is a weird kind of, like, just with Tony is kind of the connection to all of this, is that it kind of showcases that Nolte actually cares about his players and not just to have them win games for him and to help get his contract up, because that's the whole thing, is that JT Walsh kind of talks with him, is like, you're getting paid all this money off the backs of these players. And this is just a reoccurring conversation we're still having today about college athletes getting paid, and this movie's delving into that. 93 94. Was there any other cameos in there that you got? Bobby Hurley, college basketball player for Duke, is on the Indiana team.
Oh, I did not notice him.
I read that he, in one of the articles I read, that he actually had to change his game up to play for Bobby Knight, because he's like, Bobby Knight's team is more like fundamentally sound and more like conservative. And he's like, when I was at Duke, I was like throwing behind the back passes and more of a flashy guy. So he's like, how would a Bobby Knight point guard play? And so he had to like readjust his game for those things. So let's move on to what didn't work. What didn't work about this movie that we haven't talked about or have talked about?
I don't know, man. I feel like I've voiced a lot of my, like, the there's some of the cameos that didn't.
Yeah.
That kind of drew me out of it. Yeah. I think that's kind of the main thing.
I have two things.
Okay.
They're not terrible. They're just more like, they don't make that much sense to me. The timeline of the movie is a little weird. So, to break it down, in basketball seasons, high school finishes first, then college finishes second. In this movie, college season finishes And Nick Nolte goes to see Butch McRae playing basketball still in a high school basketball game. So, like, the recruiting season doesn't make sense. Also, by this point, people have already made, like, kind of their recruiting decision, their commitment decisions. And yeah. It feels like Nick Nolte's just starting the recruitment after the season's over. When in reality, they've already been doing it all season and already have an idea of what's going to happen next year. And there's a big gap in the summer. Like, there's just kind of these big gaps, like, where you're
just,
like...
I didn't notice that, like, we did not see much practice at all. Like, once we got the guys, it was just kind of like, oh, it's the season again. Like, once the guys were, like, on, it was like, boom, basketball season again. I was like, oh, okay. What happened to the rest of the year?
But, like, there's a big gap where it's like, he's showing them around school right at the... It feels like at the end of the school year of, like, oh, when you guys come... Because it's, like, a recruitment day. It's like, oh, when you guys come here, like, you'll have this and that and that. And then it just skips, and they're already in class. And you're like, okay. So I guess they joined. And then Butch pretty soon is already like, hey, I'm homesick. I want to go home. I'm like, dude, you've only, like, there isn't even a game yet. And you're wanting to leave after a few weeks. Yeah. So timeline didn't work for me. There's other kind of details with that too. But yeah, it didn't really match up with the real life season and how things go. I get it that it was like that because of dramatic purposes. It's like you want to, like, bookend the movie with ending of last season, beginning of this season, where Nolte was at his lowest point at the last game to where now he's, like, at his highest potential as a coach at the very end of the movie. Another thing that worked for me, the soundtrack is weird. Like, I love that CCR is the theme music for Indiana in this movie. Like, every time they're in Indiana, the music is like...
They use Looking Out My Back Door twice.
Yeah, twice. They use Baby Please Don't Go throughout the entire movie. Like, I feel like the entire score is like Nile Rodgers doing Baby Please Don't Go. It's like, and it's prominent when he's going to search for Shaq in Louisiana. Like, he's like diving through the swamp land, like running after kids, going to this abandoned warehouse, and like Baby Please Don't Go is playing, but play at the very beginning of the movie. It's just playing throughout. One thing, this is a scene that I didn't really work for me, and it's always bothered me, and that's when Pete Bell confronts Tony about the fix game. The guy who's playing Tony, I think his name's Anthony Hall, just like, it just doesn't land for me, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's his acting. It's just, it's not where I read that apparently it wasn't the performance Friedkin was wanting. And he would just run in and be like, you're effing up my scene. What are you effing doing? And just yelling at him until finally he just slaps him. And he's like, do the scene. And you're just like, okay. And the guy's like, and this is just a conversation to have. It's like Anthony Hall is just like, I want to have a career in acting. So I can't, like, hit William Friedkin because he just slapped me. He's like, so I'm going to do the scene, but if he slaps me one more time, I'm going after him. He didn't slap him again, but it's like, the scene just feels weird, and maybe that's something to do with it. It just, like, I don't buy his reaction that scene when Pete, I think Nolte's doing fine. I just don't buy that interaction that well, and I don't know if the Friedkin stuff had something to do with it, and that guy really didn't act that much after this movie. It's him or Ricky Rowe who are the two weak links to me in terms of, like, the basketball players as actors.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that played Ricky wasn't great.
Penny's not that good either, but...
Who would have thought? Who would have thought the movie about a bunch of basketball players, Shaq would be the best one?
I know, right?
But it's, I mean, knowing what we know now about Shaq, I mean, like, back then you weren't as inundated with the... you know, the personality of these players as much because you just didn't have enough time. But, like, now with, like, Shaq as a social media person and Shaq as a commentator for television, knowing now what we know about him, a lot of that character is his himself.
It's himself, kind of
goofing off, the way he kind of make faces at the way he, like, pokes his head out the door at the end, like you were talking about, and kind of makes that joke that sounds like something he would say in real life. And so it came as very natural to him, I think.
There's also the scene that he has where he is upset with the professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a lecture, Mr. Boudot, not a discussion.
May I speak?
It's not your place to speak.
Well, I'm making it my place to speak. I just want to point out to this class that this course is culturally biased.
Culturally biased? What do you mean by that?
How come we ain't talking about African folktales or something?
Well, this is a course in English literature.
Why come we're not talking about African literature?
Well, because we're not. I suppose you did read the course description before you took this course.
I gotta take this up with my coach. You told me to take this up.
That's certainly your privilege.
In this classroom,
that's certainly
this
your
class,
privilege. I'm gonna keep my eye on you, Mr. Boudot.
All right, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, I feel like no other guy that's in on that team can pull off that scene. Mm-hmm. That just feels like a Shaq of like, and especially the Neon character. He's like, I'm tired of this. Why am I here?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? But yeah, I think he is definitely the strongest of the players, like by far. He gets the and credit. That's the crazy part, is that in the credits, it goes and Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah. And when you look at the poster is Nolte Shaq. And I heard there was criticism. The one criticism about the movie is that they expected Shaq to be in it more.
Hmm.
And he wasn't in it
though, with a good supporting character like that is like, would we have been as impressed if we had seen more? Like, were we given the perfect amount?
Yeah, I don't think we would have been more. I think that was the perfect amount for Shaq. It's the same with even like LeBron and Trainwreck. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Space Jam 2 with LeBron, because I think LeBron actually can play a good supporting role. I think he's one of my favorite parts about Trainwreck. And I think Shaq is similar, like in a similar fashion, he can do the same thing. Unless he's playing over-the-top comedy. I really don't like Shaq playing over-the-top comedy. And he does that a lot in like Sandler movies. He'll pop up as like a just too over-the-top. I don't know. That's just me. Anyway, what worked that we haven't talked about?
I don't know. I think we've covered most of the positives pretty well.
The games are realistic. The reason why the games are realistic is because they actually played games. Mm-hmm. So what happened? So for the ending game, they'd basically be like, hey, go play games. And they tell the coaches, coach to win, players play to win. We'll edit it in the post-production for how we want to happen, what we want it to happen. So for the ending two games, they're legit playing Indiana's or Bobby Knight's team, and Bobby Knight's coaching to win the games.
Yeah. I was like, Bobby Knight is incredible in this. I feel like he's actually coaching. And you were like, he is.
Yes. Because he wanted to win the game so much. They were just like, we're not letting these actors and this team beat us. And Bobby Knight's team beat Shaq and Penny of them both nights they played. Like, beat them both nights. And so for the ending thing, Freakin's like, okay, that's great. But we had to have this play where Shaq gets a screen, rolls around, and dunks the ball. So they're framing it up. And Bobby Knight just goes, okay, you're going to cut Shaq off so he doesn't get to the basket. And they do the shot. And Shaq gets blocked off, and the ball just goes sailing out of bounds. And Freakin' is ballistic. And Bobby Knight's like, okay, now you can have your shot. he wanted to prove, you can't beat me. It's like such a Bobby Knight move is that he knows what's going to happen. He's like, I don't care about your shot. I want to prove that I'm no pushover. You're not going to beat me like that.
Yeah.
But the games were shot like were real life games. They're really coaching. And I think that's what works. And I feel like that's, especially with basketball movies, which I haven't really seen, so maybe that's the way you do it. Just say, hey, go play the games and we'll cut together. I think it's more... This film is more about capturing the environment and kind of atmosphere of basketball and like in the basketball world, and not just about like the drama of like a game. Because I think what I heard Freakin say was that he's like, you can't really compare to a drama of a sports game to like a drama in like a fictional sports game.
Right.
Like, there's nothing more dramatic about watching an actual basketball game and stuff's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a basketball game no matter what, and then the drama is like the context.
And with a lot of the games you're watching, there's really not that much context. Like, say, even in Hoosiers, it's like, you have context with some of the characters, you don't have context with the opposing team. if you look at, like, say, in basketball, in real life, it's like the 2016 NBA Finals, where it's Cavaliers versus Warriors. And you're having this thing where it's like, okay, LeBron's going for his third ring. He's now down 3-1. No one's ever came back 3-1. The Warriors are 73-9. They're the winningest team in NBA history. There's no way this can happen. And then the drama is it actually does happen. And you had this team claw back to win, even to the point of in the game, all the games are kind of blowouts. And then finally the last game, it's like back and forth to where for like the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, like no one makes a shot, basically. Anyway, sorry. That's my tangent on the 2016 NBA Finals. Awards for this movie. I don't really have a least realistic person, because the thing about this movie is that it's very realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody seems like they belong as far as like the players and the coaches go.
And I say the same with most realistic too, is I think all of them are very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So we have nothing for that. I created an award for this, just for this movie. The Matt Damon Cameo Award. Who's the best cameo in this movie?
I think it's pretty clear from the conversations we've had. I think Bob Cousy takes...
I agree with Bob Cousy. I think Bobby Knight's a good guy in the running. I think Louis Gossett, but I think it is Bob Cousy.
Yeah.
He has a great performance, especially from a non-actor.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, he's playing, like he's in an acting role as a non-actor.
You could watch this movie. I think if you did not know a lot about basketball at that, like if you did not know players and coaches from that period, you could watch most of this movie and pick out the people in the movie that you could go, that's not an actor. That's someone that has to do with basketball. And I do not think you would pick Bob Cousy as someone who is not an actor if you were watching this without any context.
When I was watching it when I was younger, it's like I knew who Bob Cousy was, but I wouldn't recognize Bob Cousy, like, in terms of, like, old Bob Cousy.
Yeah, if you didn't know that that's how he had aged, you, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just like, man, this guy's pretty good.
Can't miss, even left-handed.
So that's the Matt Damon Cameo Award. I named this, we can not name these in the next one, but I just named this the Joe Pesci X Factor Award. To try to give context of like a supporting role that kind of
he's not the main character, but you're gonna remember him.
Yeah.
I think it's gotta go Shaq, man. I think it's Shaq.
I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine to give Shaq a Joe Pesci X Factor Award.
I never thought I would say this going into this movie because you're like, we're gonna watch this movie and Shaq's in it. I was like, okay, just judging off of the other Shaq movies I've seen, I'm not sure that's really. I know for you that's a selling point, but it's not necessarily a selling point for me.
I was so happy we could do one of these movies about a Shaq movie. It's great. Because we'll never do one of Steel or Kazam, I feel. Shaq, I just think he's in it enough where all of his scenes work. And I do think he is one of the memorable parts of this movie. And he's kind of the only one, I think, except maybe like a JT Walsh character. He gets to kind of act with a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just... I'm acting with Pete Bell and like my family. It's that Neon's character is essentially an orphan. It kind of feels like where he's kind of alone living in Louisiana and he becomes his surrogate son in a way to Pete Bell and even Mary McDonnell. I'll give it to Shaq as well. Also too, named it this just for fun, the Gene Hackman MVP award for the movie. Because Gene Hackman is always good in every film he does, even when it's a bad movie.
Okay, all right. I'm a controversial pick here. We're going MVP of the movie. I'm gonna give it to Ron Shelton.
Ooh. Okay. Explain.
Especially having just watched Bull Durham, like this, it's one of those things we've talked about in the past with like writer directors and when they're writing and other directors. Like I think this feels much more like a Ron Shelton movie than a William Friedkin movie.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think his like philosophies of sports like shine through in this. I think I'd give it to him, man.
That's a valid point. And I think Shelton is probably, if we look at say genre, like how we do here and say like what director kind of is the king of a specific genre, it's probably Ron, in terms of sports movies, it's probably Ron Shelton.
I think he it's a unique period too, where we were kind of hitting this, like, the, and I'm sure he brought it on as well, like this another boom of sports movies, but he feels like the person who is like the outlier, and that it's not, none of his movies are your typical sports movies.
Yeah,
like we said with this one, it's like, who would think to make a basketball movie set in the off season? Like, who's going to make a baseball movie but then set it in the minor leagues? He just gives them these little twists that make it feel unique and make it feel not like anything. Like we talked a lot in Friday Night Lights about how hard Friday Night Lights tried to be not a football movie. Or how hard it tried to like defy the like football tropes, but yet it still kind of fell into them, and I think
it's a valid point.
Ron Shelton sports movies managed to be their own thing outside of the tropes,
and that's the same thing with White Men Can't Jump, because he wrote and directed that. Even argue Tin Cup, because he did that one as well. It's usually, they're all kind of underdog stories in a way, but not an underdog story like a Hoosiers or
a Rudy.
Yeah. It definitely and all of them feel realistic. That's the key. And it doesn't really delve into, it's weird, cause it's all the movies are, they tend to be about the passion and love for a sport, but never really delves like the sentimentality of a Rudy or a Hoosiers or Remember the Titans or Greatest Game Ever Played. Like, it never gets like sappy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it feels more realistic than those, but it's about loving the game despite the more realistic aspects of it that are more negative.
I like that pick. I'm gonna say Nick Nolte just because I think it's an underrated Nick Nolte performance, but I do like that Ron Shelton pick. And I don't want to steal it from you. It's kind of the deal, because I feel like you put a lot of thought into it.
You know, the best coaching job I ever did, it wasn't tonight. It was last season, you know, when we were 14 and 15. We had a losing season. But goddamn it, those kids, they gave me their heart. They gave me everything they had. They played up to the maximum of their ability. They gave it everything. And you know, it wasn't good enough. Wasn't good enough for me. Wasn't good enough for you. Wasn't good enough for anybody. That's pathetic. I mean, it's really pathetic. I've become what I despise. Yeah. I cheated my profession. Cheated myself. I cheated basketball. There's two words I didn't think could ever come out of my mouth. I didn't think I'd ever be able to say them. I quit.
Other interesting info. What do I have? I think that's all we took. Well, I'll ask this question first, because it kind of goes to other interesting info. Penny Hardaway, what's so interesting about this is that Penny Hardaway and Shaq are in this movie, but Penny Hardaway, they ended up playing together at Orlando for the Orlando Magic, and Penny Hardaway had not been drafted to the Magic yet before Blue Chips. He was drafted afterwards, and that was because Shaq loved playing with him so much in Blue Chips, he was like, hey, Orlando, you guys got to draft Penny no matter what. And at that point in the draft, Penny was like, wasn't going to go first. Orlando had the first pick. The first pick was going to be Chris Webber. Chris Webber was talked about for Blue Chips, and he was not in it because I think it was that he was he didn't want to do it after the timeout call for the Michigan Fab Five, when he tries to call a timeout and gets technical and they lose like in the Final Four or whatever, like his big, like, infamous college moment. He doesn't do it. He says how him and Shaq are talking constantly throughout the summer of like, hey, like, Orlando's gonna draft you, we're gonna pick you. He goes, once Blue Chips happen, he's like, I never heard from Shaq after that. And he's like, he goes, it's a fact, he goes, if I would have done Blue Chips, or if Penny didn't do Blue Chips, I would have been playing with Shaq down Orlando, and it wouldn't be Penny Hardaway. Mm. So Orlando drafts Chris Webber for first pick. Chris Webber drafts, or I'm sorry, Golden State Warriors draft Penny Hardaway for third pick. Orlando trades for Penny for also some draft picks that end up being traded away. One of those draft picks ends up being Vince Carter for Toronto Raptors because they traded Toronto Raptors. So, like, my weird question is, what would the NBA look like at that point in the 90s if Penny Hardaway and Shaq don't do blue chips together?
So, are we assuming then that the Warriors would have taken him third and just Orlando wouldn't have traded for him?
Orlando would have got Chris Webber and have been Webber and Shaq in Orlando as, like, this two-man, like, two-tower type thing.
Yeah.
And then Vince Carter doesn't go to Toronto. Let's say Vince Carter goes to the Warriors in, like, 3 years with Penny Hardaway.
I think, wow. Yeah, that's scary, man. The Warriors being strong in the 90s and, yeah. I think we'd be ruled by the Warriors now.
It's a crazy kind of idea.
No, I think you would not. I think, honestly, the biggest fallout we would see is with the Warriors would not have been as strong in the past few years, because I mean it's something almost kind of like the Bulls now. Like, mm-hmm. when you get that powerful, you lose power for a long time afterwards, I feel. Yeah. I guess you say the same for the Heat, really.
You might have
seen the peak of the Warriors in like the mid to late 90s instead of
it'd been a very weird if that happened. But also seeing Chris Webber and Shaq together, because then what happens there? Because then you have, it's not just that, you end up, well, also, like, Orlando beats the Bull, Penny and Shaq beat the Bulls in Michael's first comeback season that everyone wants to erase. Mm-hmm. And Magic beat him. And then Jordan has his, like, I'll show you season when they go 72-10 and wins the championship after this. So, like, weirdly, blue chips really kind of changes a little bit of the NBA in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like, however you do it. Penny doesn't do blue chips. Penny does do blue chips. It's very...
I mean, that also shows you the power of Shaq at that point to be like, hey, guys.
Do whatever you can.
I played with this guy for a movie, but we played Bobby Knight and we lost. But hey, I really liked him. You should get him.
Well, yeah, it's very much like, and Chris Webber said it. He's like, he goes, I get it. He's like, Shaq and Penny were playing like every day for like 2 months and playing like real games. And it's like, and Penny was said, like, I made sure I fed the ball down to Shaq. And Shaq's like, I'm getting points. I'm getting buckets because of this guy. And that wouldn't have happened as much with Webber is the thing. Because yeah. Webber wouldn't have been a running point. Sorry, it's a very like abstract thought of this with NBA, but it's like
you've been listening to the Redraftables too much, man.
Probably. Bill Simmons, if you're listening, this is our pitch episode to you. A couple more questions for you. Would Pete Bell redo his entire offense for three freshmen? Because it felt like Tony was being built up as the star player.
It felt like they were completely. Quickly. Like, I get that you guys had a losing season, but, like, you just rebuilt your entire team when you didn't have to, necessarily. Like,
yeah.
We never even saw Tony really play with these guys.
Like, because, like, even when you look at, like, say, even, like, Zion and them at Duke, like, they weren't, like, game one, you're the starters, we're running it all through you. It's, like, you don't know if these guys can play in that scenario yet. And especially, like, you're going against Indiana, you're going against Bobby Knight. At that point, I think in the movie is, like, number one team in the country, and it's like, oh no, we're gonna run everything through these three freshmen who I've never seen play in a big game like this. Like, you think they relied more on Tony than those three guys? Weird question, because I've read a few interviews talking about this. So the cameos, we talked a lot about them when the movie came out. A lot of people did not like the cameos, and so my question is, did the cameos hurt the movie? Or did just some of them hurt the movie?
I think some of them pulled you out of it a little bit, but I think overall it actually surprisingly worked well to, like, especially I can see how I think it's aged better than people might have thought it would. Mm-hmm. I can see how if you were watching it at the time, you're like, okay, I see all these guys on ESPN every day. Here they are in this movie. But I think it did, from looking back on it now, what, 27 years later, it's fun for those of us who know that period and know people of that period. It places it really well. I guess it's still technically dating it, but like it feels dated in a very specific, like, this is 93. This is a 93 basketball season. Like, these are the players. I think it does that well, but I can see how if that was happening currently, especially someone like Shaq, who's already playing pro, you're already watching him in the pros, to go back to watch him be a college player might feel a little like jarring.
That's fair. But I do, it's because weirdly, I think this movie has slipped into the underrated category because it wasn't well received when it first came out. It's like, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score is 37. This is not a 37% movie. I think even on IMDb, it's a 6.2. I think just for their realistic play of basketball, it elevates this film more so than other basketball films.
Yeah.
Okay, big question. If made today, who do you cast?
I mean, you just... Honestly, when you were talking about Zion a second ago, I was like, oh, you'd probably put Zion in this. Like, you got to go, are you going pros who are like still pretty young, or are you going like college players?
I think pros is the easier one.
Yeah, I mean, you could go, if you're looking for like young pros, you could put Zion in this. You could put Jaylen Brown in this. You can put Jason Tatum for sure. You know, I'm on board.
He's only like 21, 22.
He's only 21, man. You just get him to shave his sideburns.
Okay,
I'm one to talk right now, but a friend of mine who works for an NBA team, but is in a group chat with all of us who are all Celtics fans except for her, was like talking so down on Jason Tatum's facial hair, and then it like finally connected, and she was like, you know what, I'm okay with it now. I was like, that's what it's all about. It's all about the awkward phase, and then eventually it'll work for you.
I'll come through. I'm gonna say a weird person. So, one, here's how I would change it, because I feel like the game of basketball has changed so much in a way, in terms of internationally. For the Shaq role, I might think Luka. Luka's really young enough. Like, instead of him like traveling to Louisiana, what if he's like traveling like Slovenia?
I honestly thought that's what they were gonna say when they were like, we gotta go to him. I was like, oh, he's gonna be playing in like somewhere Algiers, in Eastern Europe.
Like in Africa. I don't know. I think it's an interesting idea of like, what if that type character is like overseas, and he's gotten word of this kid, and he goes and travels, because that's what they actually with Shaq's character with Neon, it was saying how he was over in Germany during high school, like, because his dad was in the military, which is actually, it's actually very meta, because Shaq was in, his dad was in the military, so they're over in Germany a lot, and that's how he got discovered by his LSU coach, Dale Brown. But like, what, yeah, I said, I'm Luka's an interesting choice, that's all I'm saying. But yeah, Zion, I feel like you kind of have to go with Zion, but I don't know if Zion can act, that's the thing.
I mean, I don't know if any of these people can act. I don't know if Jason Tatum can act, but I'm looking more for people who believably pass as like high school seniors. But it feels, especially today, in today's climate, as far as like NCAA rules go, which this movie is, it feels like you'd have a tough time negotiating for some college players to play in a movie about cheating the NCAA. Like,
and that's crazy. It's weird to think that, I don't know how much NCAA was involved in this movie in the early 90s, but where it's literally about, oh yeah, all the teams do it.
Yeah.
It's just like kind of a crazy thing.
And you had to go through them to get like, to get like the college players that were involved. But yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. But yeah, I think you gotta go like very young pro players for this. And I mean, Zion's 19 still?
Zion's like 20, I think. Luka's young though. Like I said, Luka's a young guy.
I don't know, man.
Luka's 21.
21. Okay. Yeah, that'd be fun. Like send him out to, yeah. yeah. Slovenia, send him out middle of nowhere. And
it's like, oh, I've heard about this guy. Trae Young, 21. Trae Young and Luka on the same team.
Trae Young's are the we building a dream team, or are we casting this movie?
Trae Young's the Butch character. Oh no, Trae, because he's from Texas. Trae Young is the Ricky Rowe character.
The Ricky, yeah. I gotta go out and find him
in Texas, and it's just Trae Young just like in the middle of nowhere shooting threes. I'm down with that.
Yeah, I'd watch this. I'd watch this for sure.
Luka, Trae, and Zion. That's a trio right there.
I was still pushing for Tatum because, you know, he's only 21. Puts the whole team on his back. And he's got time to grow.
Because I think Jason Tatum's a better actor than Zion. So let's do Jason, Trae. But see, are the positions the same?
Then you're going to mess your... I don't think you have to have the same positions from the original movie. I think that's...
Okay.
I don't think the script had, you know, what positions they were going for. I think they realized that whatever three you can get, you can build it around that.
So we got what we do is you have Jason Tatum playing the three or four spot.
Mm-hmm.
You got Luka playing the two or three, and you got Trae Young bring the ball up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's make it.
Who's our coach?
I knew you were going to ask me that. The players is easier than all right.
I know, right?
How old was Nick Nolte supposed to be in this?
Let's see.
He's the sexiest man alive. Yeah.
92. Yeah. Nick Nolte was 52.
Don Cheadle?
That's interesting. Okay.
I don't know. I just feel like the last two things I've really watched Don Cheadle in were like TV shows that were all about him like breaking the rules. So I feel like I buy into that.
Yeah. That's the thing is that who's a guy that you can believe that can break the rules, but you like stay with him.
And then bring you back. Yeah. That's Don Cheadle and House of Lies and Black Monday.
What about Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, we give it a go. I'd watch that. Let's do it.
I want to see Downey in a non-superhero role, a non-big budget film role.
Ruffalo. What about Ruffalo?
Ruffalo, not bad.
Do you think you would buy him as a basketball coach?
I don't know how he'd play it. Like, is he going to play it too...
Cerebral, more cerebral, like,
yeah, cerebral, idiosyncratic type character. Like, I just, as a basketball coach.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd buy that. Buy him as a jock. I'd do Robert Downey Jr. I'll
go Downey. Who's Mary McDonnell? Who I want. We didn't talk enough about Mary McDonnell in this movie because I actually really like her as an actress, and she had this weird period at this point in her career. Was like if like every movie she was playing. Her character was always as smart or smarter than like the male leads. Does that make sense? Like even in this movie, it's like the first time you see her, she's like, you got to be on the boards. Like she lists off all the things that Nolte did wrong as a coach. And it's the same way in Sneakers with Redford. And even in like Matewan with Chris Cooper, like she's always like underrated in terms of she's always on par in terms of like, she's playing a smart, intelligent, kind of just scene-stealing character that she didn't do as much film after this era. Anyway, who do you cast as Mary McDonnell's character as the ex-wife? Michelle Monaghan again? We're gonna go Michelle Monaghan.
No, going a little bit older. Who would I? Give me like Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock and Downey.
Sandra Bullock and Downey. She's the one who like. Yeah, I'd love a scene where she like tells him how his coaching abilities are off. Like, I'd buy that.
I'd buy that too, actually. I'd buy those scenes between those two. Okay, I'm down with that. I like that.
I'm not saying I'm a fan of Sandra Bullock's sport film movie history. But I had to bring up
The Blind Side.
Let's give her another shot.
Okay.
Did she win an Oscar for that, or was
she won an Oscar for that movie.
Oh my gosh!
But we'd love to see you in Blue Chips, the remake.
Yep.
Robert Downey Jr. I don't know. Oh yeah, another shout out of an actor we didn't really talk about. I think you mentioned one time Ed O'Neill as the journalist, just like in this movie,
like three scenes.
Yeah, pretty good. His journalist that works for him, not that good. like he's not that good. Like I remember there's a scene where it's just like it felt like he was like reading the lines off the paper. And I was just like, man, this Ed O'Neill is acting this guy out of the gym right now. let's see. I have the last question. Oh, yeah. And this is probably just going to be sports. But, like, what genre does this movie fit within besides sports? Or does it?
Yeah, I think this one is just a full on, which is weird movie. Because it's set in off season, but like I don't know what sports business, like the sports business genre in specific. You got Moneyball, you got this, like there's not a whole lot of other movies about negotiating contracts
Could you argue it's a crime film?
Yeah, you could try. I don't know that I would buy it. It is a little heisty.
That's what I'm saying. You have a little bit of heisty to it.
I think Wim Friedkin definitely brought some like elements of a heist film to it. You do have that feel. There's like sequences of like building the team, and then that whole montage of like pulling it off, like sending all the gifts to everyone and everything. This is a basketball heist movie. There you go.
Basketball. I'm down with that. Let's see. Anything I want to say about this? Streaming on. On Prime, I think it's underrated in terms of basketball films. It's always been kind of one of my favorites. It's definitely, like I said, a time capsule of a little bit of this era of basketball. That's it on Blue Chips. Go check it out. Tell us what you think. Is it underrated? Is it overrated? Is it Shaq's greatest movie of all time? That's the key question we all want to find out.
Pretty easy to say yes to.
Yeah. But watch it. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social media stuff, our Medium. But just stay safe. Be updated. Wash your hands. Keep good hygiene. All that stuff. That's my PSA for the episode. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. Thomas, as always, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, man.
And talking Shaq movies with me. Guys, thank you for listening. Hope you listen to more episodes soon. Bye.